Hello everyone and welcome to Horror Spiria. My name is May, and today we have a very special episode as it is spotlighting a local filmmaker as well as an internationally recognized filmmaker, Ariel Baska. In this episode, we focus on medical gaslighting and horror, as well as speak at length regarding Ariel's film. Now, before we play this episode, it was recorded in January 2023. Since then, Ariel has founded a film festival called Access Horror that celebrates the history, future, and impact of disability in the horror genre. It takes place virtually on July 8th and 9th, and you can now get your tickets at accesshorror.com. I strongly recommend that you all check out the schedule. It is jam-packed. Final Girls Film Festival has a film block playing, and you all know that we're very big fans of them. And in addition to that, there are so many incredible panels, things such as the history of horror, intersectional identities on films, mental health and horror presented by Ghouls Magazine, gatekeeping in horror, and honestly, I could go on and on and on. I just strongly recommend that you, at the very least, check out this amazing website and support this amazing filmmaker, Ariel, for doing so many things to open up the horror space and make it really inclusive and interesting. So, without further ado, we'll go into an ad break, and then we will play you this wonderful interview on the topic of medical gaslighting in horror. Hello, and welcome to Horror Spiria. My name is May, and today I'm very excited because we have a special guest on for a very special episode. So please welcome Ariel Baska. Hi.
Hi.
Did I say your name right?
You did.
Okay, awesome. Hi, Ariel. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm really stoked. I mean, I'll be very honest. This is not a theme I think I would ever imagine myself, even though in many ways, like, medical gaslighting is so much of the horror genre, but also a very lived reality. So that's our theme for today, medical gaslighting. We're going to be looking at three different films, and this was a theme curated by you. Can you tell me maybe the inspiration behind it?
Well, I mean, I will confess, like, I did direct one of these films. Yes. I wrote, directed, and produced Our First Priority about medical gaslighting, because medical gaslighting has been a huge part of my experience. I happen to be born with a really rare genetic disease that only about 3,000 people in the world have. And so as a result, I was gaslit my entire childhood, adulthood. I wasn't actually diagnosed with the disease myself until I was 30. There wasn't a name for it until I was 20. And so as a result, like, I spent a very long time, you know, saying, well, I have these symptoms. What do they mean? And being continually told, no, it's all in your head, by doctors. And so what I wanted to do was actually take this opportunity to look at how medical gaslighting plays a really interesting role in terms of both how horror plays out, you know, for particularly women and the elderly in horror, but then also, like, the different ways that we interact with the concept through storytelling. And I think it's kind of fascinating when you think about taking gaslighting as a concept, but then putting it in a medical context. I think that there are very real dangers and consequences that really need to be addressed. And that's something that I care deeply about in terms of my advocacy work with medical bias, too. So that's why I thought it would be good.
No, and first off, very well articulated. So thank you for sharing that and sharing your personal connection. I also believe that you did an excellent job curating today's selection. So we'll be looking at The Entity from 1982, directed by Sidney J. Fury. We'll be looking at A Cure for Wellness, directed by Gore Verbinski. I think that's his name.
Yep.
From 2016. And then Our First Priority, which is your film. It was released last year, correct?
Correct. It was released in 2022.
Awesome. And I think, you know, what I really loved, weirdly enough, you chose films that I had not seen. So I really was able to kind of enjoy a progression almost, especially not only through subject matter, but kind of through time and place. And I think your film was a really great culmination of the personal impact of this issue. But before we get too much into it, I would really love if you could talk more about you. You know, like, what do you do? What are, you know, please educate us.
Okay. So I'm Ariel. I'm a filmmaker, podcaster, author. I primarily work in horror and documentary. So I've been working on a number of different films that specifically highlight marginalized groups as much as possible. So the themes that I tend to delve into are particularly disability and horror, but I also really love films that celebrate femininity, the BIPOC community. I feel like it's very, very important that historically underserved voices are given their all. And so on my podcast, I also like to feature a lot of different kinds of documentary filmmakers as well, who are making work that advocates for a better tomorrow in general. So
what's the name of your podcast?
Oh, sorry. My podcast is Ride the Omnibus, omnibusride.com. And my co-host Rabia Sitabi and I have presented along with May, actually, at Final Girls Berlin in the past. So we've had a really fabulous time talking about horror films in particular, but we also talk about various different topics within pop culture and social justice. So,
which is all very exciting and yes, very important work as well. I know I've told you this personally, and I believe I've already mentioned it on the podcast as well, but your presentation with Rabia was just extraordinarily fascinating, very educational, and also gives a lot to think about. And I could see the direct correlation between a lot of things that you mentioned in that presentation to the film that we watched for this episode. So I'm not sure how spoilery we want to get because right
maybe
now
we should set an expectation right now. Like, yeah. are we going there? Are we going there?
Well, the only reason why I ask is because your film is still on the festival market, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. So yeah, it's up to you.
Honestly, I say we go for it. I okay, say we we'll go full spoiler.
Okay, we'll go for it. So this is everyone's everyone's warning. All right. So to kind of get, you know, you kind of actually already touched on this, but it would be good to understand what medical gaslighting is, right? And the mm-hmm. reason why I also mention that is, and I know this is something that you know, but I don't know if maybe some of our listeners know, but especially the issue with medical gaslighting is it particularly affects marginalized populations. So the disabled, sure, but also there's like a racial element to that, right? Mm-hmm. Something that isn't as much explored in these films, but honestly not explored in films overall. So do you mind, you know, educating perhaps those that aren't too familiar with what medical gaslighting is? Like, what are we talking about when we talk about medical gaslighting?
Absolutely. So in general, the definition of medical gaslighting refers to the practice of doctors who will refuse to diagnose people in any meaningful way, or will suggest that they need psychiatric treatment without actual referral for such a treatment. Typically, patients who are being gaslit are told that they are attention seeking or drug seeking or hypochondriacs, et cetera. These are patients who, you know, for whatever set of reasons are not being given the appropriate care. So when a doctor refuses to follow up in meaningful ways with patients and do proper diagnosis, that's typically what we call medical gaslighting. Now, what's interesting is that you also mentioned the way that this ties into marginalized communities. And when we talk about marginalized communities, in particular, in connection with one of the films that I picked for today, A Cure for Wellness, really, it's medical gaslighting is equally about medical experimentation that has been done on populations against their will. So you think about cases like the Tuskegee Airmen and the various kinds of medical experimentation that have gone on against people's will in the Black community, for example, and you see that there is also a trend of medical gaslighting where things are being done to you, but you're not actually being told what they are. So it's an interesting dichotomy when you talk about medical gaslighting, because it both involves treatment and lack of treatment, when you look at kind of both sides of that coin.
Yeah, and it's especially within, I guess for lack of a better term, like a Western, you know, like European American context, where there is so much cultural capital given to, you know, the medical field and trusting your doctors and, you know, following procedure or treatment plans. It's a very insidious type of horror, right? And it's a horror that's like daily, hourly, you know, instigated, particularly in these nefarious institutions, right? And especially when, like, you want to be healed or, you know, you want help. And yeah, this is definitely, you know, thinking about this topic for this episode has left me so uneasy in ways that, you know, perhaps not preparing for another episode would have done. And it just, you know, I think it's like awareness, but also it's just, it's horrifying how common these things are, right? Anyway, just wanted to share some of my thoughts on that. Well, I have a question for you. So these films, you know, your film, but also The Entity and The Cure for Wellness, can I ask what inspired choosing them?
So what I love about The Entity is that for me, when I saw The Entity, it was the very first time that I saw an exploration on screen of what it would be like if paranormal phenomena were a real thing that was happening in some scientific way, proven in the world, but not in a not in an X-Files-y kind of, like, I know the truth is out there kind of way, but in a very explicitly scientific context, looking at, obviously there are other films out there that explore this, but they're not based on true stories. What I think makes The Entity particularly interesting is that it actually follows the true story of a woman who had this phenomenon happen to her. And I'm afraid I can't remember her name off the top of my head at the moment. Yes. So what happens to her is particularly compelling to me, because what's represented in the film is actually part of a true story, part of a true case file in terms of how she was treated by doctors and psychologists and how she was treated by the professional community, the scientific community as a whole. And so for me, that's kind of an interesting contrast with A Cure for Wellness, which is a grandiose, dark, fantastic fairy tale, basically. And so I look at these two films, and they both have different things to say about the practice of medical gaslighting. But they also both have a lot of interesting things to say about how we treat women when we don't believe them, and how we look at, you know, either the elderly population or populations we deem to be disposable, and how we treat how we treat things we don't understand as a society.
Absolutely. And that makes a lot of sense regarding, you know, how these films explicate this theme and also why you chose them. And like I said, I really loved the progression of watching them, because then by the time that we get to your film, it's kind of like a reclamation, right? It's kind of like, here's what I have to think about that. Or, you know, like, it's the manifestation of, like, almost like a revenge, right? Or would you characterize it kind of as a tale of...
Oh, okay, I would. Yeah. I would absolutely characterize my film as a tale of revenge. And I would also say it was also a little deliberate of me to set it up in quite that way, where, like, my film is the only quote-unquote classic tale of medical gaslighting. But, you know, I feel like to get a good sense of where my headspace is around this topic, like, you kind of have to see the other films as background too.
No, absolutely. And it was so interesting. I tried to, I mean, other than, like, as I was watching these, like, oh yeah, medical gaslighting, but I was also trying to figure out why these films and not why, like, Rosemary's Baby or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's so fascinating the way that you talk about the entity as being like this science, the science-led horror in many ways, and this exploration of what this woman is going through various scientific means. Because when I watched the film, and this is actually a film that I've known a long time about, but the subject matter always scared me, honestly. And as a horror scholar, it seems kind of like, okay. But especially when it comes to sexual violence, it's a bit of a trigger for me, I guess. But and this film is brutal. Like, I was actually really surprised by it in so many ways. Like, I expected it to be a bit more, I guess, for lack of a, like, I can't think of a better word, but, like, kind of, like, hokey, kind of corny, like, he's haunting her. But it's shot extraordinarily brutally. And I say that kind of, it like, is. As a compliment, where, you know, it's really surprising the lengths that the director and Barbara Hershey herself, like, oh, my God, Barbara Hershey's just, like, incredible in that film.
Her performance is absolutely out of this
world. No, I just, it's so visceral, you know. It feels in many ways very modern, or, you know, kind of like what you expect. And anyway, maybe that won't make too much sense. But yeah, so with the entity itself, it you are absolutely right that it kind of becomes more about the all of these different tiers of doctors as well, right? We kind of have, like, her psychiatrist, and we have, like, the parapsychologist, so on and so forth. Maybe let's speak a little bit more about the entity. Do you remember the first time that you watched it?
So actually, the first time I watched it was right after reading House of Psychotic Women by Kayla Janisse. Kayla Janisse brings this movie up. It's one of the first ones that she mentions in that work that's largely about her trauma and her family's trauma that she's lived with, and looking at hysterical women on screen across the years, and how kind of the horror genre and depictions of women as hysterical have informed so much of her life, and her formation of identity in general. And the thing about The Entity when I first watched it is, yes, the first time I watched it, I was absolutely blown away by Barbara Hershey. And that pounding score is just like, it gets in your head.
It's
like
hard.
I can hear it right now. And it is traumatizing. Like it is a traumatizing kind of film. It's like the director is very deliberately trying to brutalize his audience just as much as the character. And I think for me, you know, that was why it had a very intense effect on me the first time that I saw it. But in subsequent watchings, I'm always kind of amazed at how, and knowing this about the real life woman as well, that she went through this whole process with all of these people, you know, actually documenting the case, and then it suddenly mystically going away and then coming back later in her life. So after the events that take place in the movie, supposedly, like, she was haunted by this paranormal phenomenon all over again, and it went back to this recurring cycle of violence. And there's something very cyclical and very deeply tragic about that that has kind of stayed with me.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even... I wouldn't necessarily say, like, I don't ever know where I fall on the, like, are there ghosts, are there entities kind of thing, mainly because I feel like I want so badly to believe, and then every single time I'm in a situation where it's like, let's go to the haunted house, I'm like, no, like, maybe I shouldn't mess with it, and honestly, like, legitimately, something like what this woman went through legitimately is like probably one of my top fears. I mean, I can't even imagine. And it's also something that is so, it's rare, you know, to have also those experiences with the paranormal like that as well.
But if you also think about it, women who experience sexual violence are very frequently not believed to begin with.
Yes.
And then you add in the mystical paranormal version of that where, like, oh, an invisible person attacked you. Yeah, sure, lady. You know, and it's one of those things where you have the compounding experience of knowing what it's like to be a woman and not be believed in those circumstances, but then adding the paranormal element to it. And then you're like, well, of course, why wouldn't they gaslight her? I mean, of course, right? But
yeah.
But then coming from the perspective of the audience, I think that makes it all the more enriching when you know you've seen what you've seen.
Absolutely. And actually, that is where I was kind of going to go, is one thing that somewhat surprises me about this film, especially given, you know, the context in which it was released. And I'll be honest, I didn't do research to see how it was received after the fact, but it, to me, it feels almost like a militantly feminist film, mm-hmm. in the way that Barbara Hershey's development throughout the film escalates into her being definitively right? And all the men in her life, save for maybe the parapsychologist, right, become almost more hysterical than her. Mm-hmm. Like, she becomes more convicted in that, I know I'm not crazy. Now I just have to deal with whatever this is, right? Mm-hmm. And I think in many ways, especially for the time it was released, I guess that's why I say it almost feels like even modern, or like modern to our age, where it's like a reclamation almost, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I mean, and that's one of the things that I also love about The Entity, is I do consider it a very feminist film, because I do think it, you know, it leans into, well, why were you questioning her version of events, audience? How stupid are you? You know, and it has this sort of, without being coy, it is also really looking at the development of her character and her arc in a really interesting way that
because she disbelieves herself, yeah. Even.
I mean, she is gaslighting herself just as much as everybody else around her is doing the same. And this is the thing that I tried to convey in my film as well, the ways in which we as patients try to gaslight ourselves constantly or misrepresent what's actually happening to us in a way to try and present the best version of ourselves to doctors so that doctors will believe us. And it's interesting because I feel like The Entity captures all of that so brilliantly well. And Barbara Hershey's performance captures in that one scene with her psychiatrist, that first scene with her psychiatrist, I feel like she is able to capture all of that vulnerability and all of that problematic way that we interact with our own psyches when we don't believe ourselves and what we're experiencing.
Yeah, it just makes you very sad, especially when, you know, as someone that I guess like I've been luckier with health, or I don't know, I'm always telling my doctors, I wish you just run every test on me because I always feel like something's wrong with me. It's like this. Well, one question that I was going to ask you, and I guess it ties into what I'm trying to say, is like, do you think a lot of the fear or experience around medical gaslighting is more of an institutional fear or a fear of our own bodies?
I mean, I think it's both. I feel like, you know, there is a fear of our own bodies and a fear of things going wrong with ourselves that we are constantly facing, but we're also facing institutions with their own sets of rules and regulations that for me are the bigger threat because capitalism dictates like what test is covered and will your insurance pay for this? I don't think so. Let's not bother. This test costs this much. This test costs this much. I'm going to refer you for psychiatric services because that way I don't have to do any diagnostic testing. And it's as much about capitalism and hierarchical structures as it is about institutions as a whole. It's when I think about gaslighting, I think the majority of people who experience gaslighting would tend to put the blame on the hierarchical, patriarchal nature of the institution of medicine rather than necessarily like specifically what's going on innately within their body.
And I think that that's a really great answer and segue kind of into what A Cure for Wellness is all about, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a very different film from The Entity, very different film from your film. And really kind of at its core is in the title, right? What is wellness? And, you know, the very, you know, notion to be at the prime of your health, right? Mm-hmm. I'm also surprised you chose this film I don't know. I know that this film wasn't that well received when it was released. But do you feel like you immediately loved it when you watched it?
I didn't. I actually hated it when I first watched it. When I first watched it in 2016, I saw an advanced screening and I thought the ending was absolute and utter garbage.
It's the same ending?
I assume so. I mean, I haven't seen a different ending.
He like rides off in the bike with a smile.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. But it's not that I didn't like. It's the idea that, you know, all of his business partners would have come all the way out to Switzerland to figure out what was going on. Really? Really? I mean, that's kind of and it's kind of a weak ending. Like, I like, you know, the smile is creepy. I grant you that, but like, you're
also just why?
Yeah.
Though?
I mean,
like, when the last frame to me confused me more than anything. I was like, okay, I guess, all right, and then the last frame, I'm like, what am I supposed to think now?
Yeah. And you're taking what is fundamentally a dark gothic fairy tale, and then you're suddenly trying to make it into something completely different that you don't know. There's no plot basis for thinking that there's some kind of world in which he suddenly becomes a zombified. I don't know.
That's how you interpret it too. Yeah, I literally read a few things like, am I supposed to believe that this is Jason Isaacs? Is he just crazy now? It seems to almost like the film is building a thesis throughout like 2 hours of it, and then the last 15 minutes it kind of unravels its own thesis, right?
It really does. And the reason why I picked this film and why I do stand by its inclusion is the fact that I feel like from the very second you set foot in this institution, you know that the doctors are gaslighting you. You know that they're hiding something. They're not telling you the truth. And you know right away that whatever is actually reality is being denied to you. And so
almost in a frustrating way.
Yeah.
As an audience member, yeah. When he like walks up and she's like, sign this. I'm like, why would you sign that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like it really does strain credulity to me in certain parts of it. That being one of them. But what I love about the film, though, is that it does dive into a lot of the darker history of Germany and medical experimentation done by the Nazis on Jewish patients, disabled patients, BIPOC queer patients. And it's interesting how it specifically speaks to this history of medical experimentation while also being in a gaslighting context. And then you throw in, like, you know, the way that women are treated in certain ways as well. You throw in kind of histories of exploitation. And I find this a really interesting film to talk about. Like, I really love the way that Jason Isaacs explores this character of the Baron, who is, you know, both the head of this institution, but also secretly carrying out his own experimentation to make sure he can live forever. And, you know, and I love that line that he has where he says, you know what the cure for the human condition is? It's disease, because without disease, there's no hope for a cure. And I mean, it's a very silly line in a lot of ways, but at the same time, I feel like it goes to the heart of what a lot of medical gaslighting is about, which is you're either hoping for something to be wrong with you because the unknown is so much more terrifying than the known, or alternatively, you're going up against doctors who won't help you know yourself. And so there's always this strange dichotomy that exists.
I love that. Yeah, no, that definitely makes... I mean, I think that there are a lot of really interesting things done in this film, all of which you pretty much mentioned. And I think, especially in contrast to the other films that we're discussing, sort of like, you know, the entity, you know, she kind of like reclaims herself by the end, right? But in this film, we are introduced... I never really understood, by the way, the first scene with Morris dying. I kept waiting for that to like come back, and it never really kind of came back. other than it being like the instigation, I guess, right, mm-hmm. as to why Dane DeHaan moved to wherever. But so we are introduced to this character of Dane DeHaan that's like, clearly he'll go to the top for anything, so he'll go on this trip or whatever. And we get like humbling of his character through the experience at the institution. Throughout the film, it seems to be like it's an overall critique of the very like medical wellness, these very concepts of health, right? Mm-hmm. Or at least I felt like that's what the film was really trying to dig at, was like this idea of wellness in and of itself, right?
Yeah, I think to a certain extent it was trying to do that, but it wasn't entirely successful at doing that, I would say. Because, you know, the whole idea here, the way that it's expressed is supposedly that these people who are going off to a spa to be rejuvenated are actually being literally mummified, you know, and that there is no cure for anything is really the central thesis, I would say, of the film. But what's interesting to me is that while there is no cure, the way that the interactions between the patients and the doctors play out is really fascinating to me, because it explores these dynamics of, you know, the doctor must be obeyed at all costs. And, you know, even though I distrust the doctors, I'm going to do what they tell me to do just because they're doctors and they know better than I do. And so I think this history of compliance is actually explored a little bit in this film in a way that I really enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of, you know, that relates to a question that I have been trying to like figure out how to word, where it's like, you know, with medical gaslighting specifically, is the answer within the institution, or is the answer if there is an answer, is it in a disavowal of what these institutions symbolize?
Yeah, like that's a great question, and I don't know that I really have an answer for you, except to say that I consider gaslighting as a practice to be generally a sign of narcissism and narcissistic personality disorder to a large extent, and just in general in the world, in a very sort of generalized kind of way. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we as a culture need, in the Western culture I'm talking about specifically, in Western medicine, we need to move away from this doctor as hero cult and move toward patients as the experts on what they're experiencing.
I think that that's very well said, and also very specific to the context in which we're talking about, because I can't think of perhaps like exact cinematic examples off the top of my head. But when it does come to the treatment of medicine, say in Asian film history, or in like, I think of a few third cinema examples from places like Senegal and whatnot, it's a very different interpretation of how we consider the medicine person or the doctor in those mm-hmm. cultures, right? But you're absolutely right. In the Western context, it is kind of like a doctor is God, right? And yet... You know, you brought up so many examples of like medical gaslighting on kind of like a day-to-day basis. But, you know, one thing that comes to my mind easily is just how little oversight doctors actually have. I mean, geez, like there are so many real life examples of doctors poisoning, killing their patients through very legal means. It's horrifying. You know, like, healthcare in this country is already, like, horrifying, but to add this kind of, like, you know, this questioning of the person that's supposed to help you, how can you reconcile those feelings? You know, it doesn't make you want to reconcile them.
And I hate to tell you this, but there are a lot of documentaries out there that specifically document exactly what you're talking about. For example, there's Dr. Death, which is about...
That's what I had off the top of my head.
I mean, Dr. Death is so huge. But then there's also the Netflix documentary, The Bleeding Edge, about how there's absolutely no oversight on medical devices whatsoever. And how easy it is for things to slip through the cracks without any approved testing, et cetera. You know, the thing is that there are so many pieces to this that are so huge and so many different ways that you as a patient can die and have it never be ruled as someone's fault explicitly, because there are all of these different ways in which doctors can be protected from actually whatever decision-making process they chose to use that can cloak whatever misdiagnosis occurred, whatever malfeasance occurred, et cetera. And it's unfortunate, I think, that in this country, we have a tendency to say, like, well, it's terrible because no one can become a doctor because of malpractice insurance. And it's like, well, the reason malpractice insurance is so high is actually capitalism, and we need to just attack capitalism and burn it all down to the ground. That's my secret agenda here.
That's the thesis of this podcast. Yeah. So you're in good company. And I'm sure that you'll know what documentary I'm talking about. I know I saw it on Netflix where it's like, even if certain, say, medical institutions recognize, wait, why is this nurse ordering so much of this morphine or whatever? Like, this seems like malpractice, and they report it to the cops or, you know, to another organization. They're like, oh, well, they're doctors. They know what they're doing. It's like, that is just such the accepted answer. And it's, you know, I think a lot of there's this, I don't know if it's a meme. I think it's a meme where it's like, nurses are either baby angels sent from the heaven, or they are demon brats that want to kill you. And I feel like that's like that's just it. That's the medical field in the United States, at least. And I'm sure perhaps throughout the Western world as well. It's like these two polarities. And it seems like there's one polarity that is attracted to the authority and the lack of oversight that that is chronic within that field.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that this is a binary dynamic that exists in a lot of fields that are hierarchical as a whole. Like, I would say education and healthcare are the two that have the least oversight and the least and the most potential for harm. And
absolutely.
Having been a teacher for 15 years, I can't help feeling it this way, but I do. But healthcare, you know, when it's life and death stakes, and we still don't actually do anything except in retrospect.
On that note, that's where I feel like your film is a bit of a respite in many ways, because it's the only film that may embody like medical gaslighting, perhaps so metaphorically or literally, but in really important and good ways, I feel. Do you want to maybe describe what your film is about before we talk about it at length?
My film starts with a young girl named Hannah walking into a doctor's office, and it shows her interaction with a nurse, and she's rattling off her lengthy list of symptoms when the doctor comes in, and the doctor is all prepared to treat her as a person, realizing she's only 10 years old when the nurse reminds him he has another patient waiting and so he'd better hurry up. And so he decides to deal with her quickly and dispatch her and tell her everything is in her head. Meanwhile, her 30-year-old version of herself, who is also in the room, who's experienced this trauma already, is snarkily responding to the doctor all along. And so the idea was that you have the 10-year-old girl and the 30-year-old version of the same girl, and they're both interacting with the doctor in different ways. Even if the doctor doesn't see the 30-year-old version, she's like a ghost. Basically, in the end, the 30-year-old version is an avenging angel who, when the young girl has a panic attack and passes out, she sends the doctor to hell after explaining why he belongs there.
Which I love the effects work, by the way, of the last few minutes. Was that very difficult to try and execute, or did... Okay.
Yes, it was very difficult. And it's funny because, like, one of my best friends, who was also the COVID safety officer for the film, was like, Ariel, are you sure you know what you're doing with this latex? Like, this looks really cheesy and stupid. And the thing is that, like, you know, if we were staging it as a theatrical production, what we did would never have worked. But thanks to both VFX, we had a very talented VFX artist, we had a brilliant gaffer, brilliant colorist, all of whom kind of came together to create this perfect team that made it look really good on the effects front.
Yeah, I like the... Like, probably my favorite part of that ending scene was, like, the amorphous membrane. Like, I felt like that really came across in a surprisingly, like, effective way where you get that. I mean, well, you said it yourself, right? Like, this guy is being sent to hell or whatnot. But it doesn't feel... It doesn't feel cheap. It definitely feels, I don't know. I really love these experiments with dimensionality. And I feel like that was very effective in your film. But yeah, so your film, you know, as much as I really love the entity and as much as I could appreciate A Cure for Wellness, they're very much grounded in victimhood, which makes sense. You know, it's not like being a victim is necessarily a bad thing, you know, but I know that this is something talked about, especially amongst many marginalized populations, and something that I can relate to. It's like, you know, making yet another film about medical gaslighting where victimhood is so central to it, but that is completely subverted in your film, right?
Mm-hmm. And I did that very deliberately. Like, I actually wrote a play when I was in college that was a lot like this script in general, that was a one act specifically about a young girl and, you know, I think it was the 45-year-old version of herself, you know, being snarky with the doctor, and really looking at, in that dialogue, how the communication breaks down when you have a doctor and patient dynamic where the patient is obedient and silent and waits to take their cues from the doctor versus someone who is a little more combative and a little more aggressive, and how both kinds of behavior around doctors at once create this kind of cognitive dissonance within the film and within the original play. And I really wanted to have that for my first film. And for me, like, it's absolutely essential. Like, in the Spanish language version of this film, which we where at least the Spanish subtitles, I should say, there was like intense, passionate arguing over, you know, when vosotros should be used. specific, you know, versus usted versus other forms, because the question of like how polite the angel, the avenging angel, is supposed to be and how much respect she's actually trying to show the doctor was so essential to understanding kind of both the character and the idea of what a patient is supposed to be in my ideal world.
No, yeah. And, but you know, again, that is sort of the emotional satisfaction of, you know, this theme of medical gaslighting embodied in a film like yours, where it's like, why do we need to embody this politeness towards the institution, right? If I'm not putting you in threat, or if I'm not harming you or putting you in danger, unlike, you know, frankly, you could be putting me in danger with your institutional authority, like, why would I not, you know, what is wrong with being combative, really, you mm-hmm. know? And so I really appreciated, you know, I'm very grateful that you decided to curate this episode and choose these films, but especially to include your own film, because I think it does do something different in the horror genre, even within medical horror overall, that's not so much like, oh, look what this awful, you know, experiment did. Those are all very valid stories. But it's kind of like, but what's the other side of that? You know, like, that deserves more exploration too. Yeah. So
it's, and I feel very strongly in making work that identifies how ableism is the villain, right? Not monstrosity.
Absolutely.
And how, I mean, because one of my central theses in terms of the work that I make is really how the horror genre on the whole has been built on the backs of disfigured and disabled bodies, and really feeling that we look at monstrosity or deformity or disfigurement as a way of, you know, having a crib sheet to villainy, when in fact, I think it's very important that we create work that shows how ableism and these hierarchical elements of institutions, et cetera, are the real enemy, and identifying that capitalism is the worst and we should burn it all to the ground.
Yes, we need to make sure that we mention that every 5 minutes. Ad support for this podcast. right, no. And to kind of clarify or expand on what you just said, I remember distinctly that in your own presentation, when we've spoken before, you have clarified in saying that it's not that I don't want disabled villains, but, you know, it's the fact that, you know, where does that monstrosity come from? It doesn't come from the fact of our, you know, bodies or whatnot. Yeah, and I think that's just so well articulated, especially, you know, using your example of the film, like, you know, it's an avenging angel kind of thing, maybe an anti-hero, maybe, like, if you want to characterize it that way. But to me, it just feels justified, right? And maybe that's more to what I point towards. It's sort of like, where are the justified storylines, right? Where is the, you know, like, good for her kind of segment of things regarding, you know, ableism and medical gaslighting, right?
Mm-hmm. And I feel like we need that for all the isms out there, for sexism, for racism, for classism. I feel very intensely that we need stories that give us both our catharsis, but that also explore other possibilities than just revenge. Like, I took the lazy way out. I made it a revenge tragedy. But, like, I feel very, very secure in saying that there are other options out there for both storytelling and possibilities in the world. So don't go sending your doctor to hell and don't tell them I told you to do that. Anyone listening to this? But I do want to make work that makes people question. And that's the thing that's most important to me.
Right. And I think that you were at least very successful with that, with our first priority. So I really appreciate you sharing that. I was going to ask, maybe somewhat related, do you feel like making the film was cathartic in any way? Or can you describe maybe the process of, you know, getting it made and seeing it being kind of shopped around now? Like, how does that make you feel overall?
Overall, it's kind of an incredible thing that's taken on a life of its own. It was very cathartic for me to make the thing to begin with. But then I actually won an award from Superfest Disability Film Festival. They gave me the Advocacy Award. It's the first time they've ever given the Advocacy Award to a horror film. And, you know, they were kind of jokey about it. But when I watched the film in an audience of entirely disabled people in San Francisco right before I got the award, it was the most emotional experience I think I've ever had in my life. Because
that's awesome.
Literally hearing everyone's gasp in every moment and knowing it's a lived experience for every person in that auditorium, and sort of simultaneously having this outpouring of emotion throughout was something I can never really put a name to entirely. But it definitely fueled me for all of the work yet to come. And, you know, like it's got a life of its own, like I said, like it's on Alaskan Airlines now. And, you know, it's doing other things. It's got a New York premiere soon. And it's very exciting and it's very gratifying. But what makes me the absolute most proud is just knowing that I've reached people who've had this experience and knowing that it hits them the way it hits me.
I think that that's really the most anyone that identifies, particularly within marginalized identities, like that is sort of the dream. I mean, I think that's what bell hooks is talking about with the oppositional gaze. It's like, how do we challenge, you know, the images, the stories fed to us when we know like our realities aren't what's on screen. And then when you finally do recognize a reality on screen that hits the way in gratifying ways, I mean, your film is very gratifying whether you're disabled or not, but I assume especially if you're disabled, it's gonna hit an even deeper chord. And I think that that's really beautiful. And I'm really glad that you've had that experience. I was going to say, I was like, I love your answer to that. One of my, I don't know if it was a question or assumption, is like, do you feel like making the film made you feel different towards your doctors? Like, you're like, I worked out some of my anger towards you, but maybe you have, maybe you feel kinder towards those institutions now.
That's actually a really great question. And if I were a different person, maybe, but I am pretty entrenched in my opinions at this point in my life. And what's interesting is I've shown my doctors this film.
Oh, that's funny. I think that's really funny.
No, I have. Like, I literally just saw my neurologist this morning and he was asking me about my film and he was laughing about, like, he's like, really? You know, you won the Advocacy Award for that. And it's really, really funny because I feel like literally everything that comes out of the doctor's mouth in that movie is something a doctor has said to me. Literally every line that comes out of the doctor's mouth is something that has been said to me, and things that have wounded me over my lifetime. And when I made this film and I showed it to my mother immediately reacted with, well, what about the doctors who saved your life? You've almost died several times. Like, what about those doctors? And I was like, this is a story about how I feel about the medical institution as a whole. This is not about how I feel about one individual person. This is how I feel about the entire apparatus. And my mother responded by saying, well, you should have like a hashtag not all doctors at the end of the movie.
I was going to say your mom is doing the not all doctors representation.
Yeah.
No, I think honesty is really important. And it's also important that, you know, whether you're a marginalized identity or not, it's not like we're perfect moralized people either. And whether we would want to be or not, you know, we have every right to feel how we feel because of our trauma. And I love that even your doctors, the ones that you like at least, have a sense of humor about it. I think that that's great. So what is exactly coming up next for you?
Well, next, I'm working on two things, actually. I'm working on a feature horror anthology about disability and horror. And that is specifically an anthology called Distortions that looks at five different stories of disability and horror, all written by different people with disabilities in the disability community, directed by me. And I'm really excited about that project. I'm also really excited about Freaks and Shrieks, which is a documentary I'm directing about the history of disability in the horror genre. As I stated earlier in the podcast, I really do genuinely believe that the horror genre cinematically has been built on the backs of disabled and disfigured bodies. And I really believe strongly that the roots of that go back to the Victorian freak show. And so I'm working on a documentary to kind of explore those ideas. And
maybe freaks will be in it, right?
That's, oh, freaks joke. Will for sure be in it. The name of the name of the documentary is Freaks and Shrieks. And we're doing a whole ass case study on freaks because it is both the most exploitative and nurturing and magical movie out there somehow. It is. Like, it's, it manages to be all of these things. Yeah. It's so complex. It's so rich and it's so lovely.
Absolutely. And so if people want to, you know, keep track of your career, keep track of you in respectful ways, how can they do so?
You can do so by going to my website, arielbaska.com. I'm also on Twitter as @ruinmysky. I'm on Instagram as justaskabaska. In case you didn't know how to spell my last name, that gives you a hint. But I am really happy to talk to anyone about these topics because for me, I think it's just so important that people continue to push forward and talk about disability in different contexts, talk about medical gaslighting, talk about advocacy for marginalized populations as much as possible. So thank you so much for having me on, May. I really appreciate this. This is a great conversation.
No, yeah, it is my pleasure. You're the one out here slaying dragons, and I'm just glad that you're able to share your work and your story with my little audience, because I know that they're going to be so stoked to hear more about your work. And you're the documentary and the anthology sound remarkable. One thing that I meant to mention literally like an hour ago is, I don't know if you know this, but when I was doing research for the podcast, kind of just like, I just throw around random keyword searches sometimes on Google, I put up medical gaslighting films, and your film was the first result.
Really?
Yeah. You can do it after this. Put medical gaslighting in quotes and then put in films. I didn't put in horror. I didn't do any of that. Your film was the first result that comes up.
Really? Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah. So I think that's a good note to end on. You're at the top of the Google searches. So I think that that's great. Cool. Well, thank you so much for spending the time with me, Ariel. I cannot wait to see how you keep killing it this year. And thank you to everyone for listening.
Thank you.